yeah, that was the precursor to rap mentality. And even though via Beastie Boys, Thingfish pretty much summed up all of rap's generation. Why don't you whine? Go on there, son. You know, I mean, the whole verbalization of Thingfish was indeed, you know, I mean, Frank just kind of, I don't think he intentionally did it, but summed up the whole rap generation, you know. It's a shame Frank wasn't a rap artist. Oh, my goodness.
Well, he did a rap song on Broadway the Hardware, didn't he?
Yeah. What was it, Anal Sex or whatever? What was that one called?
Jesse Jackson song?
No, something about...
Promiscuous.
Name it, man.
Promiscuous.
Promiscuous, yeah. Indeed. So, yeah.
Okay, let me say this, is that... my tiny note chart is based on Zappa's musical creations. The phrase Grand Wazoo was in the subtitle. But Frank was ahead on everything. And he had the concept of sprechstimme, you know, speech song. And that's what rap is. So he was into speech song back in the 60s.
Well,
yeah, 60s and 70s.
Let me say this. The basic germinations what impresses me about rap, as much as I've, like I said, Beastie Boys, whatnot, white kids actually saying they are wiggas and, you know, making rap quite popular, what impresses me is the sheer mechanics of it. Okay, here's a poor kid locked up in a, you know, whatever domain he's living in, and all he has is a turntable and some rhymes in his head. And basically, you could take this little vinyl record and scratchy, scratch, scratch, put a little rhythm to it. I mean, just basically, that is like the sticks and stones of making fire, more or less. Do you understand what I'm saying, or...?
No, yeah, and my chart shows the movement of media to the disappearance of media, and then that's why the mouth comes back. But it's not a literate mouth. It's a multi-level, multi-sensuous, tactile mouth. And that's why rap flows out of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's totally logical that the post-media world would fall back on the mouth.
Oh, hold on. I got to call you on that for a second. 50s, what would we call rap in the 50s? What, Little Richard, James Brown? Who would we say doing rap in the 50s? Muddy Waters? I mean, Bo Diddley? Who would actually... Robert Johnson, going 30s or 40s.
Okay, I knew when the way I said it would be misinterpreted. The evolution of rock music or music under TV conditions and then the computer conditions, satellite conditions, step by step. I have it on my chart. I have jazz, Elvis, Beatles, rock, disco, and then rap and rant. The thing is that, no, I didn't mean that rap happened back then. In the 50s, 60s, I'm saying that rap was the necessary conclusion of pop music, because pop music... I didn't finish. Let me finish the thought here. Pop music in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s was wrapped up with media imagery and media effects. But the post-media environment of the post-Android meme that rap represents falls back on the caveman mouth. It's a tactile mouth. That's what I meant. It was the last phase.
Yeah, I got what you're saying, but who would have dreamt back, let's take just guitar, for instance, as a rhythmic, acoustic, nonverbal, tactile instrument. Who would have thought that guitar would have been obsolete by the 80s, by rap? I mean, that is bizarre. I mean, would you not say?
Oh, yeah. I'd say, you know, the greatest guitarist, Zappa, he predicted what would have come... He thought and conceived of sprechstimme as part of the evolution of music. So he anticipated, like, the effects preceding the causes, rap, but he did not invent it. But he saw what was coming, and nobody predicted rap, but in retrospect, my chart shows how you can understand how it logically unfolded.
But in phase three civilization, he does do a spoof on, yo, MTV raps, man. talked about the parallels or paradigm between Civilization Phase 3 and Finnegan's Wake, he does make a spoof on Yo MTV Raps, and then MTV becomes obsolete by the medium that it had become such a huge success. Ultimately, it would eat itself, like the sign of the infinite eating itself, the snake eating its tail, more or less on many tarot cards and whatnot. Do you get that?
Yes, I mean, 8 on its side, the Mobius strip is the Dobbs quadrant on my chart. So, yes, the Andromeme eats itself and disappears, and you're left with a caveman post-communication, post-information world, and the grunting of the mouth is the last form of entertainment. And it's a multi-sensuous mouth because it crams imagery in there in response to the MTV information overload world that the rappers grew up in.
I agree.
Yeah.
And take it post-mortem.
Yeah. That's right. No, I said it very well there. You're agreeing with my eloquence.
Yes, Bob, of course, man. You are an artist of language, and I seem to tell everybody this, and they just don't get it. Language become obsolete, I mean, other than grunting. I mean, people grunt and groan over everything. Well, I have money, I don't have money. I'm going to survive today, I'm not going to survive today. I'm happy today, I'm depressed today. Is it all just a grunt? I mean, is that pretty much... The grunt is the most prolific thing we can come up with as a human entity, or what?
No, the grunt is just the chemical body. And that's the limitations of the chemical body, but... Rap comes in when you have the TV and chip body. So it's not just the grunting of the chemical body, it's the overlay of imagery from the TV and chip body and the interactiveness of the chip body that is what makes up the language of rap.
But isn't the chip body, and that more or less the telekinesis, or I don't know if that's the proper adjective, we'll say the intuitive concept of the Android meme, where people cannot verbally or physically express it in their everyday life or even conceive of it. But, I mean, isn't the chip just more or less a replay of that paradigm?
No, and your point there that they can't even conceive of it is explained thus. The TV body moves at the speed of light. The chip body moves at the speed of thought. And when everybody's moving at the speed of thought, it's very hard to establish one thought. That's why we have a president for this period who can't communicate. He lives at the speed of thought, not the speed of light, which is slower.
Oh, no, I have to disagree, Bob. This man is the most, what would we call it, eloquent liar? I mean, the most proficient liar. I mean, this guy has got the art form down. You know, he can say, like, basically, oh, everything's all right, you know, as long as, you're familiar with Jeremy Scahill, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and more or less, Bush is, now, this is not an intelligent man, but at the same time, he's taking care of all his buddies. I think Cheney's more or less running the show. And they have to kind of coach him through, you know, being able to be dummied up enough to, you know, give a presentation and say, yes, everything is all right. We will hold the course. We will stay the course. But the man is the most proficient liar since his father, or, you know, I mean, do you not consider this, well, I know that you can compete with that, but I'm saying that do you not consider this somewhat scary on all levels, or?
No. Look, when you're in a post-information society and live at the speed of thought, no communication is necessary. Bush does not lie, he just doesn't communicate. And people fill in that there is something to communicate and that he's not doing the correct way of truthfulness. The thing is, he is not communicating. He's talking to himself, or he's thinking to himself.
Well, yeah, but...
And he doesn't know and consider that he's lying. because he does not consider information has that quality. He lives in a, I don't want to say a fantasy of expression, but he lives in his level of role of being a caveman who is communicating solipsistically.
Hey, Corbin, hey. Corbin, let me ask you, what do you think Bob means? I'd like to know what you think Bob means when he's distinguishing speed of thought and speed of light.
What Bob means, speed of thought and speed of, one more time, I'm sorry.
He wanted to know if, what you thought I meant by the distinction speed of thought versus the speed of light.
Oh, okay, speed of thought versus speed of light. Okay, speed of thought is something that we seem to adhere to, that we think, you know, that we... Obviously, there's some electrical impulse within the neurons, within the synapses, that means thought. And as opposed to speed of light, are synapses able to travel at the speed of light? I believe that they are, but they're few and far between that are even aware of this concept. And that's what the mass implication of ignorance more or less implies. I mean, would you agree or disagree?
I don't say the audience or the global population is ignorant. They just have no way of describing a post-verbal, post-cultural situation. So they put on zombification as a strategy. And it's only the chemical body that looks zombified. The robotic is in the TV and the chip body, but it's not a roboticism as the chemical body expresses it.
There is two quotes you said. There's two universal things, hydrogen and stupidity, and
right.
They're both massively abundant.
Yes. He said that stupidity was the most plentiful element in the universe.
And hydrogen.
No, he said it was more of stupidity than hydrogen.
But physically, there is more hydrogen than stupidity. Now, can we compare the two?
Yes, stupidity is an effect of the human technologies that humans make. Hydrogen is made by first nature.
But is it a conscious thing? Where do people just not know any better, or is it a conscious dumbing down of sorts to keep people stupid?
No, listen. The fish doesn't know the water it's swimming in. So we're in a new water, living at the speed of thought, and the fish are in that water, but they don't know how to see through it. That's the problem. Nobody knows how to see through it, except maybe me, and I'm trying to point to it, but the fish don't know what I'm referring to, because they're still in the new water. So humanity evolves unconsciously. So we have to be careful. We can say they're stupid because they don't know the water they're in, but not many cultures ever did. So I don't think we should complain. The kids today, they communicate on a level of ESP, or rapid post-verbal consumption of the eye and the ear. And so that cannot be measured in IQ terms.
I have to take you to task on that. The eye and the ear, I do agree with, but the eye and the ear are catching what is fashion, and what is
yes.
Fashion is played by the
Android meme,
the Android meme, but also the Madison Avenue androids, so to speak, making everything somewhat fashionable.
Yeah, that's just the chemical body and the TV body trying to keep up with the speed of thought and the chip body. See, they're just trying to keep up. So when people are rushing, they get robotic.
Whoa, Bob, I gotta take you fast, man. They cannot keep up at that speed.
Well, that's right. I agree. The fashion.
It was like riding the bicycle. We're dealing with a bicycle and a tricycle. Okay, you and me are on the bicycle, and everybody else is on the tricycle or roller skates, trying to keep up.
Yeah, and the Android meme isn't even going anywhere. It's just here resonating. So the Android meme makes people think it's bipolar and that there's a place to go to from here. And the rushing about is the hyperkinetic space, whereas tactile space is simultaneous everywhere. That's the super angelic we're experiencing. But the chemical body is limited to the angelic and runs around harried like the Bible predicted.
I'm trying to keep up with you, Bob. I'm trying to also kind of poke holes in it just to keep it realistic, okay?
No, that's good.
I'd like to keep it surrealistic, you know, Dali-istic or Burrow-istic or Zappa-istic or even Bob-istic.
That's right, Dobbs-istic. Dobbs-istic.
Bob-istic, yeah.
Dobbs-istic.
Dobbs-istic.
Okay, so I'm trying to see, trying to get you to perceive the interplay of the four bodies, and the judgment of the chemical body is too limited. We need to include how people have learned to juggle the other three bodies.
Okay, I'm going to ingest in the chemical body, I'm going to light myself a cigarette.
Yes.
So explain this. Let's go through a tetrad on the cigarette.
Okay, the cigarette enhances smell and gesture.
And what does it reverse into?
Well, it stylistically enhances, it enhances stylistic body posture and body language. Like in the 30s and 40s, everybody's smoking on the movie screens and looks pretty cool.
That's the beauty of it. They always, in cinema, the art of cinema, or I guess the visual medium of cinema, we should say, they always have to smoke cigarettes to make action happen, because basically there's nothing pretty much happening other than
right.
dialogue in
That's
the
right.
visual communication. So they say, okay, light up a cigarette and
fill in the gestures.
Yeah, fill in the gestures, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. And then so cigarettes obsolesces, well, you could say, fresh air, clean clothing, but you could say...
Yeah.
Obsolesces health, you could say.
Teeth, might obsolesce some teeth and some lungs, you know, yeah.
It obsolesces the chemical body. That's what it does, because you're actually, the fad of smoking comes in the 30s with television, and people imitate the stylistic gesture, and the chemical body gets beat up over a long period of time because of that. Okay, I'll take that, and then it retrieves...
It retrieves the visual space of the visual medium of cinema. I mean, more or less, because now we can look at, Cary Grant or who's the other guy, Gone with the Wind or whatnot, some of the female...
The Greg guy.
And, I'm saying that's what it retrieves is more or less the golden era of cinema, because at all points...
It doesn't retrieve it. It is the golden era. It's when it's in a medium. It's an environment in the 20s and 30s.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah. I was thinking of Greg. What is it? Cary Grant and then the other guy.
Gregory Peck.
Clark Gable.
Clark. Yeah, there's Clark Gable, Gregory Peck, Cary Grant, and I guess the sinister guy, Brett or something, Gone with the Wind. Is that one of those three?
I thought it was Clark Gable. That's the
Yeah, that's who it is. Yeah. Clark Gable.
That's the name I'm searching for.
Okay, so it also retrieves, the cigarette retrieves, not the visual medium, it retrieves... desire. It retrieves a smoking dragon. It retrieves the penis and the quivering quim.
Or quivering quim. Now, Bob, check this out, man. I came up with a really wonderful idea.
We didn't do it. What's it flip into? It flips into... okay, the milkshake. Think of some kind of consumption.
The roller skate?
No. It flips into some kind of mouth activity.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It flips into LSD. Or junk, or heroin.
That could be a possibility. Yeah, it would probably flip into smack, yeah.
Yeah, because cigarettes burn the lung, so drugs burn the brain.
Now, there's also the motif of where Burroughs has mentioned this many times, where the man on heroin sits there and smokes a cigarette until it burns his knuckles or something.
Yes, know? Yeah.
Yeah, and, oh my goodness.
So we did a tetrad on the cigarette.
Now, listen, we need to get somebody to finance. I've come up, you remember 200 motels, okay?
First of all, you didn't hear my show last night, did you?
No, I did not. I was not up, Bob. I was not up, man.
That well, go to the KPFK archives and look up Roy of Hollywood and catch the slot. Just
will. I definitely will. Before we end the conversation, Roy of Hollywood, KPFK.
Radio
and it came on between, 2 and 5 last night?
Yes, but he's on, they have two slots, it looks like, 12 to 3 and 3 to 6. So you would do the last hour of the first slot under Roy, they don't say Evan's name, and then you continue the beginning of the second part.
How did it go? I mean...
Well, it was 11. The first guy who called in, we started off with some Zappa music, and then I did a summation of all the things I'd discussed with Evan through the years. Of course, nobody who hadn't heard any of that would know what we're talking about. So somebody called in and claimed that I was basically irrelevant and shouldn't be on the air. And so we accepted that. And then the next 10 to 12 calls, whatever it was, were nothing but a loving. Everybody was saying, "No, Bob is healing me." Many people were healed. It was pretty incredible.
That's great. That's great. Now check this out. We need to find. I was just watching a special on Lou Wasserman, of course the mogul that ran whatever for 40 years. Okay, Lou Wasserman. Are you familiar with the name?
Yes, and the right hand man is Sidney Korshak. Read the book Super Mob.
Yeah, and
Sidney Korshak. He was the interface between Lou and the unions.
Right, and
your father would have known him.
I'm sure he would have. Next time we get some mediums together, we'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
Now, what I was getting at is 200 motels, of course, Zappa struggled with this, and this is probably the most brilliant thing to come out of 72. I mean, just the orchestral scores, the arrangements, 200 motels is one of my favorite Zappa albums by far.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay? Now, I think if we can get Lou Wasserman, we might have to channel him from beyond the grave. But what we can do is get somebody to finance a project called 222 Bob's Tales, or Dobbs Tales, okay?
Yes, 222 groupies.
Bob's Tales or Dobbs Tales.
Or groupies.
This would be a take on 200 motels.
Okay, well, it would be 222 condos.
Exactly. I mean, whatever the paradigm may be.
Yes.
But we've got to get somebody to finance this because, I mean, between the interaction or interplay that you can do with any major and minor media figures, 222 Bob Dobbs tales or Dobbs tales or just the tale, basically trying to get across the message of saying, yes, at this point, with a little bit of what would we call it, incentive or whatever, you can travel at the speed of light. You can think at the speed of light or the kinetic ability to speed, just to tap into the gene pool, more or less. It would be more or less a Dobbs Tales, 222 Dobbs Tales. Does that make any sense to you? Or?
Oh, yeah. I've been gathering footage, and various people have been doing it for years. Matter of fact, we got all of Jerry's Pixel that he did to me in the 90s around Venice on our little CDs, little DVDs. Jerry shipped his whole hundreds of video cassettes to Matt Shepard in Ontario, and Matt held them for a year or two. Then I gave him the grave duffel, and he digitized them all. So I brought back Jerry's archive in one handful. 31 DVDs.
And they're all on one, on 31 DVDs? Because, 31's a resonant number with Crowley, very Crowleyan number. I mean, matter of fact, I have got a couple books referenced. I have them sitting on the chair next to me. And 13 and 31, the mirror image effect, that would be like the 12, 21 effect or whatever.
Yeah.
But 31 is... Are you telling me it's 31 DVDs of pixels?
At this point, well, it's more than pixels, but a lot of them are pixels. There's TV shows, all kinds of things that Jerry triggered or set up. But the thing is, I'm just saying there's some footage. There's other footage other places. And the way things are going, I'll have the money soon to put this on. But yes, the Dobbs story will be made into a epic movie, or whatever you want to call it.
What I'm saying, don't you get the conceptual continuity of, instead of 200 motels, which was basically Zappa, I mean, he really reached at his age. I mean, musically and academically speaking, I mean, that is just a phenomenal, you know, piece of music. I mean, that you have Strictly Genteel, you just numerous things. I mean, besides the, you know, relative, penis jokes and penis dimension.
Yes.
Okay. But 222 Dobbs Tales.
What are your top five Zap albums? I just want to make a note, Corbin.
Oh, my goodness, man.
Any of them. It doesn't matter. They're all good.
Yeah, I would have to say 200 Motels is definitely one of my favorites. Joe's Garage is definitely another conceptual continuity. My goodness. Chic Your Booty, just for the sake of at the time when it came out, it was just so phenomenal. With Yo Mama. Matter of fact, I have a cassette tape of me, you, Phil, and Jerry playing Yo Mama.
I remember.
Yes, and I want to get it to Jerry. I need to find the cassette tape of it. Bob's First Lesson. And we got the Duke Ellington song on there, Don't Get Around Much More.
Hey, did you know that Phil died on Carolyn's birthday?
No, I did not know that. Wow.
Did you know he died?
Yes, of course. Yes, I did a special on M&F for him. I wrote a big poem talking about how he had passed on to the...
I was on that show.
Right. That's exactly right.
So that means that's the last time we did a show, 5 years ago, 2003.
Yeah, I would imagine that was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the thing is he died on the day the Iraq War started. You know how fanatic he was about trying to make peace happen.
Really?
No, yeah, he tried to make peace happen, and then it was just too much when the Eternal War showed up on his birthday, on Carol's birthday, and then he died.
But what I'm saying, we had always talked about he put the carriage before the horse, or the horse before the carriage, was saying, GCD, that was the argument you and he had.
That's right. The media war versus the chemical body war. I was basically describing the TV landscape and the chip landscape war, and he was trying to limit the idea of peace to some kind of calm for the chemical body, and he ignored the impossibility of getting that as long as there was an invisible war being waged by the TV body and the chip body.
But more or less, Bob, it has to do with these greedy, what we call them, war profiteers. It's the first time that they've had 8 years of Bush now, first time that they've had a privatized war where they have Bechtel, Kaki,
Halliburton,
all these guys are just laughing all the way to the bank, man. I mean, it's like...
No, they aren't. They're all being arrested. You got to read worldreports.org.
One more time, run it by me.
Worldreports.org. One word, worldreports.org. Read what's posted there today. And it's a long post, and it's a big XCIA man.
We'll get back. I think I mentioned three Zap albums. Shake Your Booty would be the third. Zappa Live in New York has got to be probably at the time that recalls the Saturday Night Live Not Ready for Primetime Players, Purple Lagoon being one of my favorite instrumentals.
Yeah. Uncle Meat.
No, I would have to say the one with Billy the Mountain on it, Live at the Fillmore, the first or second one, Billy the Mountain.
No, I think that's Just Another Band from L.A.
Another band from L.A., because I spent about 6 months transcribing Billy the Mountain, which is almost impossible to transcribe. I mean, it is just a monster of a song. Even though it sounds like a 70s hippie best whatever, but it is very technically intricate and very rhythmically challenging. So, five albums. Go ahead.
I think I was mentioning the war. Oh, yeah. It's not. Go to worldreports.org to see how chaining them have been imprisoned and are not running the show anymore. But it's not that the greed heads caused the situation. Humanity and the consumers of the internet caused this situation. The chip body threatens all cultures and all economies. And
No. Come on now, man. I have to take you to task on that. What, consumers of the internet caused this war or are profiteering from this war? Am I not hearing you correctly or what?
No, you hear me correctly. The telegraph caused the American Civil War. Movies, cars, and airplanes and telephones caused World War One. Radio caused World War Two. TV caused the Cold War. The Android meme...
Whoa, pause for a second. Now, we know that Crowley was actually a secret agent during World War One. He was in New York City.
Yeah, and World War Two also.
In 47 he died.
Yeah, but he was active in World War Two. As a matter of fact, Crowley is famous, you know, starting in the 70s. He was retrieved by a certain faction of British intelligence that wanted him to be known.
Mention some names and I may be familiar with them.
Well, I don't think you would know. No, these are, you know, intelligence agencies.
Yes. General J.F.C. Fuller. He was an admiral in the English... he was an admiral in the English Navy or some shit. And he was one of Crowley's publishers in World War One. World War II, J.F.C. Fuller.
I knew him. I knew Admiral Fuller, and the point is, yes, he was not a fan of Crowley, but as usual, to cover it up, you get a guy who's not a fan and force him to publish it so you don't see who's really behind it.
Right. He was more or less...
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
The Patsy.
In a Patsy, in a sense, he was more like an archivist of sort. Fuller was an archivist, not like Crowley. No, he did not, but they were friends. The point is Crowley took poverty very hard in New York City during World War One, and he wrote poems and whatnot about how the world... See, he considered himself like Shakespeare.
You know,
they're from the same hometown in England.
Yeah.
And he considered himself a Shakespeare, and he's like, how could the world's greatest poet be stuck in New York City during World War One? And he became an intelligence agent, and they got him back to England, more or less. You know, so yeah, he did play both sides of the fence. Plus, Germany has always been the hotbed of occult activity, Masonic occult activity. And he was, there's a guy named Eugene Grosch, I believe.
You mean George Grosch?
No. Eugene Grosch is the guy's... It's a big satanic cult in Germany or some shit. You would know... You would know what I was talking about. I can't think of the organization right offhand. Give me a few seconds and it'll come to me.
Okay, let me tell you this. Remember, I met Crowley as a 15-year-old.
Right.
And what he developed, a certain faction, they wanted to counter the effect of Gurdjieff and Krishnamurti, so...
Yeah, he hated Gurdjieff. He hated him with a passion. They met, and I think Israeli Regardi... more or less recalled the encounter, saying basically it was like two dogs kind of sniffing around their rear ends.
Yeah.
They both had respect for each other, but he did hate Gurdjieff with a passion.
Right, and the faction in British intelligence wanted to promote their guy because he worked for intelligence. Gurdjieff didn't. So they promoted their team. It's like if we know that Navy intelligence never shot John F. Kennedy because they don't shoot their own. Now, if Kennedy was a member of the Army, they might have shot him.
Now, wait a minute. Hold up. That's Jungian synchronicity. I heard something earlier this evening. It was a report, something about Kennedy and being a Navy PT, the Bay of Pigs thing or whatnot, and saying more or less is, and they did it in a Massachusetts type accent. They said, "Oh, I went down there and it was a fiasco, and I came home and I was a war hero, you know, and it was Kennedy." And they were talking about that. It was the PT 109. Yeah, the Jungian synchronicity. I heard that earlier this evening. Go ahead.
Yeah, I get that all the time. So that was, this is the latest installment of millions of synchronicity. Okay, we're talking about Crowley, and then you mentioned something else. Then we're talking about Zappa. Did you have something, Scott?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Well, so, what did Corbin think the basis of the hatred was between Gurdjieff and...
What was the basis of the hatred between Gurdjieff and Crowley, Scott asks?
Well, it was more or less they both were different schools of thought. And Gurdjieff obviously thought that he was the premier guru. And it's more or less like each one, Crowley, being as repugnant as he was as an individual and being a megalomaniac, he couldn't handle another guru in the room. It's like being in the room with the Dalai Lama, okay? You know, how many people accept the Dalai Lama is the reincarnation of how many Buddhas, you know? It was more or less just repugnance. And Gurdjieff, I don't know, I couldn't speculate, but I know from my studies of Crowley that, it was basically you can't have two gods in the same room and expect them to be fond of each other.
No, that's true. Now listen to this. I'm being distracted because there's someone getting out of a car here. Just a second. What was I going to say? Gurdjieff, Crowley,
secret intelligence?
Yeah, you know what? I really want to get on to... you're familiar with Hermes Trismegistus?
Hermes Trismegistus, yes.
Yeah, and the Kabbalah, right?
Yes.
Okay, this is a very fundamental book, and I read it probably 25 years ago. And it used to be one of my favorite, what would you call it? Primer books, okay?
Yeah.
And they have seven, okay, it's only seven, it's not Bob's eight resonant level, but has seven axioms of truth, and I would like to just go through them and kind of just get Bob's take on, some of these principles.
Okay.
The first one would be the principle of mentalism. Principle of mentalism, basically. That's the first axiom of the Kabbalan hermetic philosophy.
Okay, at the time of the phonetic alphabet, the oral culture got fragmented into the concept of the logos, and the three parts of the logos were dialectics or logic, rhetoric, and grammar. The rhetoric school felt that the word was for persuasion. Grammar looked for the essence of things in the seeds of etymology of words, but dialectics felt that thought was prime. Thought came before anything. So I would say the mentalism concept reflects the dialectical aspect of the trivium.
All right, now we move on to the second one. It's called the principle of correspondence.
As you get into writing, it's the same period. This is all the result. This code is the result of the phonetic alphabet in Greek culture. So correspondence means something inside you matches with that. The outside reality. Most people think that's what truth is. It corresponds.
Well, that's the inner and the outer.
Yeah, the correspondence of it. There's no inner and outer for the pre-literate people. But once you have the demarcation caused by visual space and the effect of the phonetic alphabet, you start to have an inner and outer. So there's the dilemma of correspondence is an effect of the phonetic alphabet, just like the idea of mentalism is.
Okay, and the third one is what's known as the principle of vibration. Oh, my goodness.
That would be the retrieving the resonance of the oral culture. That's speech becoming an art form, the content of the new visual space. Okay?
And then we have the fourth one being the principle of polarity.
Ah.
Everybody's bipolar these days. Good God, give it polarity.
That's what the literary culture is based on, this schizophrenic effect of inner and outer. So yes, the bipolar is emphasizing the dialectic. rather than the rhetoric and the seeds of things. So, yep, again, another effect of visual space is that limiting things, reducing them to a dialectic.
And now we'll move on to the fifth principle of Hermetic philosophy, Kabbalah. This would be the principle of rhythm, which I think Zappa pretty much had a gift for. I mean, I think it was more or less trial and error. At first, he wasn't really aware of rhythmic intricacy, and then realized that rhythm is more or less sort of just a principle of life, if you'll call it. But anyway, the principle of rhythm.
Yes, that is a retrieval or the desire of visually biased culture to have an after image of tactility, which is what rhythm is, the beat of the hand touching and letting go, the drum roll by the hand. So yeah, rhythm is tactility, vibration is the ear.
Now this one, the next two ones are, very much, I have to take the task, even though the explanations for each one are very interesting, but this one would come under the heading of karma. Okay, but it would be called the sixth principle of Kabbalah, and would be the principle of cause and effect.
Cause and effect is a result of visual space. Pre-literate cultures do not see cause and effect as separate factors. They see effects causing alter effects, causing and re-causing other causes. They don't make the division. Pre-literate people don't ask why. Why comes in with writing in visual space.
And this last one, and this pretty much, Bob, I think you've become a master of it to some degree, because you're able to how would you call it? Like one of those the comic book characters able to transmutate into just about any situation.
Yes.
But anyway, this is the seventh principle, would be the principle of gender. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there again you have a dialectic. But if you're talking about transmutation, that is the kinetic sense. So we've got the ear, the touch, and the kinetic. Transformation, shape-shifting might not seem kinetic, but it's, if you think of outer kinetic and inner kinetic is the proprioception and the haptic. So you see the archetypalizing of former sensory modalities that were given and unconscious before writing. Writing got the first look at these things and then mutated people into a visual bias in the course of getting a look at the older sensory modalities.
But what I'm getting at, this is very much an occult axiom, meaning, more or less the principle of gender. I mean, everybody has to more or less say that they have female or male characteristics, and in this very confused society of what is actually masculine and what is actually feminine, and that is actually not the proper adjectives for this principle, but I guess it would mean principle of gender, meaning more or less it could be positive, negative, it could be male, female, it could be, it is the paradigm of just any essence. I mean, being able to distill into a holistic method of all essences is the principle of gender. I mean, if you want to elaborate on it.
Well, what's interesting is that monotheism first popped up in Egypt in recorded history, and they began to have a writing system. Well, it definitely wasn't the phonetic alphabet, it was ideogrammic or syllabaries. What's interesting, people don't know that the dialectic of Isis and Osiris and all that situation in Greek writing, in Greek language, were symbols for the positive and negative sign of the electric environment. So when you said positive and negative, take it as literally. The positive charge and the electrical charge, that was the positive and negative were part of the dialectic of electrical charges, and that is embedded and not understood in the Greek writing system.
Now, lightning is obviously physically constructed of a positive electrical, negative electrical charge, and then probably an in-between charge. But lightning is a symbol for enlightenment. I mean, it is a symbol for initiation. I mean, that is, lightning would be the actual kinetic realization of, yes, this is happening, and saying that, yes, I can move at light speed. Yes, I can think at these, continue my sentence.
The enlightenment is the emphasis on the I. Now, the Age of Enlightenment comes in right at the beginning of the Industrial Society, which is an extension of kinetic space. So, as we move into the kinetic space of the late 1700s, early 1800s, people see the I for the first time, just as at the time of the Greek phonetic alphabet, people saw the ear and the tactile and the proprioceptive for the first time. So enlightenment definitely is the visual bias.
Bobby, I'm catching you on all your definitions, man. I've heard all this stuff for many years, okay? Now, come on, you got to take it a step further. We're going to take you to tactile acoustic reality, we'll say, you know. Verbalize yourself some.
Yeah, no. Listen, I need to, we're going to take a break here for a second. Here, hold this, Scott. I have to go speak to him. Just a second, Corbin, get back to that.
Corbin, I have a simple answer to your gender dilemma. Are you there?
No, it's not a dilemma. It's a very much what we'll call advanced occult idea, we'll say.
Restate the question. I want to see if I thought what I heard.
More or less, there's seven principles in the Kabbalah, and that's what's known as Hermetic philosophy. And more or less, more you get involved in what would in old school, it's a very hard idea to assimilate the principle of gender, because we all say, oh, you are male, you are female, you have certain characteristics. Now, in order to progress or to come through certain stages of initiation, and these initiations are going on constantly, you have to kind of be able to assimilate, yes, things are not only a male, female. It would almost be like an amoeba type situation. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's the seventh principle of these axioms in the Kabbalah.
Well, I don't know what you mean by amoeba, but are you saying there's a third distinction, which is the androgynous?
Yeah, that would probably be it, and that used to be probably celebrated pretty much in all Greek culture, Roman culture, and whatnot. It doesn't mean that I'm saying that more or less, in order to get to that point, it takes a certain amount of understanding. You cannot just say everybody has a bias. Everybody is either male or female in this surrounding, and then we have all this confusion over sexual identity. Everybody's always seeking a certain amount of, you know, sexual gratification. I have a girlfriend. I love her to death. You know, she's female. I'd like to have sex with her. But does that mean it's very hard to assimilate these different perspectives and be respectful of them is more or less what I'm getting at.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
In this is my own sort of personal philosophy, which is maybe an oversimplification, but you know, in the human species, a male is a male because he has a penis. A female is a female because she has a vagina. Now, in Jungian terms, every male has a recessed female within him, and every female has a recessed male within her.
Yeah, I agree with that. I understand what you're saying. But But what I'm saying is to be able to put yourself in those different spaces. Now, does that mean that it's a very...
I can't talk to that. I'm not sure I'm up to the task of...
Put it like this. It has nothing to do with the levels or knowledge or whatnot. In simple, magical, ceremonial, magical terms, you must be able to assimilate either God form or Goddess form and be respectful of both, okay? Do you follow that much? I mean,
sure.
Everybody likes to say there is a God, but if, like we were talking about Osiris or Isis,
right.
Okay? And being able to assimilate both of these characteristics, being able to say that is a process of initiation, being able to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I mean, this is just... This is just a thought on my part. It's not a realization, but obviously one is one, and it transcends gender. Then it splits into two, and now you have the dance of the duality.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But what I'm saying, just being able to recognize that, takes a lot of understanding. Most people aren't to that point. They cannot envision it, you know? I mean, they cannot... even envision it. But on your hand, and this isn't trying to be a male chauvinistic, which I am a male and I am a chauvinist because I'm not female. When you understand women to an umpteenth degree, please write me a book and explain it. But it doesn't mean I do not have respect or understanding of it. Now, being able to assimilate those characteristics and understand what they're about is a certain level of spiritual enlightenment, man. You know, does that make any sense at all? Or?
Yeah, sure, and I'll bet your girlfriend's really rooting, she's really working hard to make that happen.
Yeah, sometimes. Most of the time, she's kind of bitching up a storm, but I'm trying to be respectful.
Yeah. She's just bitching because you don't got it yet, and she can't figure out how to communicate it.
That's right, the woman is smarter, you know, what is this, a reggae song or something? I forget.
Well, you know, we got our bitches too as males, and trying to communicate that to our feminine counterpart.
Here. Corbin, I'm an expert in all this stuff. You know, I'm the one who's been with Connie for 42 years.
I get what you're saying.
Now I understand all this. Now, here's the way I understand it. If you get too focused on the chemical body and the obvious gender difference or complementarities, you're missing the confusion that's evoked by the TV body and chip body on that relationship. So your friend is responding to those factors and doesn't know it, and you are too.
Yeah, of course.
So you don't focus on the chemical body. Don't even bring up this issue of gender. There's no genders in the TV and chip body.
But that's the new magical age. What I see right now is a transition of old, I can't say it's old hat, because basically, like you said, there's nothing new under the sun, there's nothing old under the sun, okay?
Until now, but this is a new situation.
But now there is this new form of magic, or ESP, or telekinesis, or whatnot, that is just almost instantaneous. Now, being able to...
Speed of thought.
Being able to make it work that type of mojo or magic or whatever you want to call it, is doing away with all the old hat of ceremonial magic, where you have to set up a circle, you have to set up an altar, you have to consecrate yourself, you have to, the altar.
Those are all visual space effects. Circle, altar.
No, they're not visual. It's also psychological now.
Well, psychological is a visual space effect. There's no psychological in the preliterate. They don't have a psyche. They don't even have a body. They just permeate tactile with the animistic nature around them.
Yeah, myth.
No, that's later.
You're going to have to get another phone.
We're being able to transform And this is what the chaos magicians are working on. I mean, this is what Bob is. I mean, define Bob, and you will say it's the new form of magic, which is almost instantaneous.
That's right.
But we have not, until we're able to change the channel to the new, being able to receive it. It's like the digital upgrade of the new TVs coming up in next year. You have to do away with the analog TV in order to get the digital TV because antennas will not work anymore. Now, there's nothing wrong with antennas, but damn it, we're on to this new thing. Do you see? That's more or less the argument that I'm putting forth. And I mean, you can describe it how doubts will.
Yeah, the facts are, that's the facts, ma'am.
That's the facts, man.
Yeah, it's interesting. The word effects can be effects. You know, fact is in effect. So, but the new is here, it's having its way, and it's the awareness of that that leads to, healthy relationships. So, the new digital comes in, but we have to anticipate the effects.
And, what would the effects be? I mean, being as everybody is still in the analog age. They're not even pedaling behind my tricycle, man. They're fucking roller skating.
Here's what the effects are. There'll be no effects, because that's the TV body, which is an old body, subsumed in the chip body. We're in a situation now where people are not affected anymore. They've been seduced into the condition of not being affected, but they are not affected
by... Now, let's get our ground right. Let's talk about seduction. I mean, everybody is seduced in every which way possible. They're seduced into thinking, well, if I have a better job and I make more money and I have that car and I look right and I have this girl and I lead this type of lifestyle and whatnot, they think that they're living it all to the hilt, man, you know, and they don't realize that this new, we will call it Bob magic, okay?
Yeah.
B magic.
Yes. Yes.
B magic, they're still trying to pedal behind the old seven. What will we call it?
Seven circle. The seven circle.
The seven circle. Yeah, yeah. Or the seventh, seven analog magic.
And, yes.
Then they're trying to catch up to this eight magic. What does eight symbolize to you? Obviously, it's the serpent eating itself, the internet subsuming itself, or I don't know if that's the proper adjective. But basically, there is no end, there is no beginning.
Right, you know? Right. Eternity.
Well, yeah, but they're trying to get there. They're saying, how do we find this? We believe in this. We don't know how to find this, okay? They're stuck in the seven, the paradigm of seven, and the visual...
Seven is a broken eight. The number seven, the shape of it is a broken eight, chipped off eight.
What I'm saying, they're trying to catch up with it. They haven't even gotten to the first one yet, man. You know?
That's right. Bob's work is cut out for him. You got a lot of work. I got a lot of work.
Now, we've talked about this here and there, on and off. Obviously, for some reason, I like Robert Anton Wilson. He does verbalize things, and he is a New Yorker, and he does say things very well. But he's obviously very hung up on this 23 number. You know,
in the seventh circle. He's still in the seventh circle.
Well, but I think he's aspiring to the eight.
Yes, yes. But he can't give it up. He didn't give it up. Do you know, here's an interesting thing. Did you see my interview in Paranoia magazine in April last year?
No, I have not, but go ahead.
The title of the issue, the article, was The Only Man Alive.
Right, yeah. I saw on the Chandler show? Is that the guy's name, YouTube, or what?
Chandler.
Chandler. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Not D, just N-E-R, Chandler.
Spell it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, C-H-A-N-N-E-R.
Okay.
Anyways, in that article, they finished the interview on a page, half a page, and the rest of the page is made up of a Robert Anton Wilson memorial statement. He had just died a month or two before the issue came out.
Yeah, I know he was ill, so he actually passed away. What month, man? What month was that?
No. January, February, March. I'd say January, February of 2007. Maybe January. January, February.
Am I up on things? Go ahead.
Right, and he died right around the time the movie 23 came out.
Oh, so that was the Jim Carrey movie.
Yes, yes. Now, the point is that you have this memorial put right after my interview. And we know we do have this competition between me and him. And the actually, this is the anniversary of Corbin, May 29th, 2008. It's exactly 15 years ago when I encountered him on my first appearance on Dave Porter's Music of the Genesis, or first of a series of appearances I've been on before in 88. Anyways, that was the one where he called up. At first, the double called up, and then he called up, and he fainted. You know, and Guffey heard that and couldn't believe that his hero Wilson fainted interacting with me, so that's why Guffey started interviewing me, or talking, or studying me. Now, so here we are on the anniversary, so it's appropriate we talk to you. I was wondering what was going to happen today. So we have this competition, and he could claim he's the only man alive, sort of, subliminally. So here we have the decision, the final heat, and who wins? Me, because right at the end of the interview, they show him being dead. You have to see that the editors did not know this. The linguistic, imagistic unconscious showed the meaning of me being the only man alive. The only other contender was gone. That's pretty good magic.
Yeah, that is, man. I would have to. That is black smellish. Black smellish.
Yeah, getting close to Ishmael Reed. Now, the thing is that you need to order that issue from Paranoia. You need that. That's a special issue. You need to have that in your head.
Well, man, is something I can find online? Or, man, I don't even want to go there. Now, let's talk about this. for some reason, all great technologies come out of war. You know, I mean, they're talking about GPS systems, the internet, satellites, whatnot.
Well, all media is protection, so war is one of the complexes of protection. So it's a yin-yang thing. It's irritant and counter-irritant.
But for some reason, they're giving Al Gore props for creating the internet. Now, this is not factual as far as I know.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't agree with it. It's just part of the Android meme playing with people. You know, by creating fake facts.
Yeah, but, more or less, that is the ultimate intelligence. I mean, keeping if not the masses, but the enemy creating false information, disinformation is what it's all about. I mean, Bush is not Bush. I think he is more or less, how would you, Bob, I mean, you're not just puppeteer, are you?
Yes, anachronism-wise, I am.
but what I'm saying is, Cheney must be pulling these strings, but...
Look, you're worried about information. There is no information anymore.
No, information has become obsolete to a certain degree. But there's all these talking heads out there believing all the hype. And
they don't believe it. They're actors. The thing is that when something's obsolete... No, listen, I'm not going to drown you out here.
Shut up.
Major McLuhan point here, when something's obsolete, it works. Information's obsolete, so we're going to get more and more than ever. Remember that principle.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I don't disagree with that, but what I'm saying is, there's all these talking heads, perspective, like someone will say the progressive leftist. I mean, a do-gooder will say, even though the information may be obsolete, will say Amy Goodman. Now, what would be your take on her, other than her own survival or, you know, spreading obsolete information, which is very pertinent at this point because it is not mainstream. So somebody needs to spread obsolete propaganda to keep a balance on the, you know, completely obsolete propaganda that's running the whole thing.
No, you need to read a little Foucault. The yin-yang of the information ecology is such that the seriously fraudulent fake information gang, they need someone like a less fraudulent information gang to give them reality. They have no reality unless someone is critiquing them. This yin-yang is the basic understanding Foucault spread around. Foucault. So that, as I... are you there, Corbin?
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the we're going to have to switch phones soon because the battery's going. But anyways, if you look at the Paul Krasner-Dobbs dialogue back in...
What year was that? Because we saw Paul at one of those art openings back in... Good God, man. What was it?
Anyways, flip side. March 94, I think, is the issue.
Yeah, 94.
Now, I pointed out to him that he and Alan Dulles of the CIA, or whoever took over after Dulles, were a yin-yang situation, and that the counterculture was a necessary thing to prop up the establishment. If the establishment didn't have a counterculture, they, being obsolete in a post-information society, would not have any reality. So you need an Amy Goodman to prop up Bush. Bush needs Amy, and Amy needs Bush. You see, it's silly. I would never listen to her.
I would agree with you, man. I totally get what you're saying. But on the other hand, for those people that are still under Bob, are you there?
Yes, there. But don't worry about those. There's nobody stupid anymore. Rai's return to essence. We're all one. Now, the definition of that requires a bit of expertise. But since we're all one, we don't need to understand anything anymore.
No. I have to take you to task, man.
No problem.
There's people out there that they're not even familiar about the woman, you know, and her intentions may be, you know, what would you call it? I wouldn't say self-serving, but self-preserving, you know, which obviously that is pretty much the play. But you know, the right, they're barely even awake to the fact that this woman exists. I mean, it's like Ralph Nader. Everybody's gonna... I wasted a vote one time on Ralph Nader. In the, you know, he is a very intelligent guy, very, you know, articulate, whatnot. But, you know, just take it from there.
I did have something to say. Let me just think for a second. The distraction is reality, and distraction is important. This market, this wealth we're in today, is based on distraction. So we have recycling of every meme, every homeopathic pattern. So everybody's relevant, but there's no way to judge your relationship to it in terms of a hierarchy of intelligence. So we'll have more Amy Goodmans, we'll have more Bushes, we'll have more Cheneys, we'll have more Dobbs, we'll have more Corbins, more Gordie Howe, Bobby Hull. You know the new guy, Sidney Crosby, comes from a new great hockey player, comes from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Talk about lockdown Bob Rule. He's only 19 and he's a captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Philadelphia something. I don't follow too detailed. He's one of the peas down there. So, but the thing is that, Corbin, understand this ecology, that we're learning that distraction is not a flaw. It's distraction is what humans love. And it's building and keeping us away from a confrontation.
Distraction, yeah. Distraction is an ultimate necessity. Okay, I can buy that. But repeat that one again.
We're moving into the eight zone here. getting out of the seventh circle. You do operate, you're very good at it, articulating the significance of my wisdom. And but you personally find it hard to actually live in the eighth zone. You're actually stuck in between because you know the obsolescence of the seventh circle. So this is an example. This is tough for you to get. That what we always call distraction in the era of literacy and the search for truth, which was the matching of inner reality with outer reality and correspondence, that whole quest was subsumed by the tactile making environment, where it doesn't matter what is being made, long as you are providing content for the tactile medium. So distraction, or non-truth, or ignoring truth, is the term for the fact we need information and consumption of our senses and extended senses rather than truth. And that is a truth.
But see, I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is happening is these people, they are so distracted that they're almost hypnotized to the point of comatosis.
Well, that they are not alive in the sense that I am. They're not reappeared. They're disappeared.
No, I know that, man. I've got that much. That's my frustration with the general population. I mean, that's what keeps me from, you know, becoming a genocidal, what would we call it?
Suicide bomber.
No. I would be a genocidal celebrity.
Right, like Charles Whitman. A Charles Whitman or Ted Bundy, you mean?
No, even better, man. We're talking about continents at a time. They've already tried to reel me in for that. Look, Corbin, you're the guy for the job, man. You got to take out at least, you know, one or two continents. Now, hold on a second, man. These people are just asleep. You can't kill them just because they're asleep, you know? We got to wake them up to some degree.
Well, listen, you've got to realize that the waking up enterprise, this is what Gurdjieff, Krishnamurti, and Crowley didn't understand. The waking up enterprise has been severely obsolesced. That's what McLuhan and James Joyce understood. Finnegan's Wake, it's a satire. Finnegan's Awake.
Exactly. That's what I've tried to explain to people many times. Poor guy.
You don't need to explain it to them. You just need to say...
Living in Dublin for 2 years, I got it. I got the culture, man. They sit over there in a damn pub all day long, you know. Oh, so-and-so, poor guy has died, you know. And they cut down, toss a pint at his coffin, and he wakes up, I'm not dead. What's wrong with you idiots, you know? Yeah, I got that much, man. You know, they've already tried to recruit me as a, you know, genocidal celebrity. No, I can't do it, you know. But maybe if the money's right, I'm thinking about it, Bob. But I got to check with you first.
Yeah, you do check. You should check with me. It's not an important issue. Money will come to you a lot easier than that. The point is... You got to realize that there's no way to judge who's asleep or awake nowadays when you're dealing with the four-body model.
Right. I just kind of...
Well, if I had standards, I wouldn't be doing what I do on Evan, you know, or on any show. I'd be just staying where I professionally am trained to in the Secret Council 10. But I wander among the crowd knowing there's no difference.
I agree with that, but is it not frustrating to know that they've got to dummy down all these people, man? I mean,
they don't dumb it down. The people dumb themselves down because they don't understand how they've been extended and then castrated.
They're either dummying down or numbing down. Numbing down or...
And they're also intensifying. The distraction world intensifies our reality. We're going in four directions. Quadrophenia.
Well, yeah, and that's funny you mentioned that, because, I mean, that is a brilliant rock, what would you call it?
Rock
retrieval?
Out?
Rock retrieval?
Yes, yeah, that's rock retrieval. Help, I'm a Rock, you know, Frank Zappa, first album.
Help, I'm a Rock.
Yes.
I'm a cop, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a cop. So the... you know, there's so much...
Wait a minute. Now, does that mean just because we're aware of this distraction that we're cops, man? Because the cops aren't aware that we're all distracted?
Well, you can be a hard cop or a soft cop. Remember what Beefheart said. He said, I'm not a cop to that. He didn't say what he was a cop to. That's what we are. We're not a cop to that.
Right, yeah. Now, is Don okay? I mean, he's very sick. I know that much.
You know, that was what I talked about on our last show in the tribute with Phil Chamberlain. I talked about how I was the last outsider to talk to Beefheart on his birthday in 2002.
Right, right.
Yeah, remember that show. Listen, I need to switch the phones. So I'm going to have to take it. I'm going to go in the other room and put this in there and take the other one. So I hope it works. If it screws up, call back, okay?
We'll just go get the other one.
How about this? Can we set up something tomorrow night? Or what's your schedule like?
Just a sec. Okay, are we ending? I don't know. It could be the same situation where late at night we call you.
That would be fine, man. That would be fine. If you want me to call back, because I think we pretty much covered a lot of stuff tonight. You know, and you got emphasis on the what would we call it, on the distraction mode.
You need to think and ponder that for before our next conversation.
Pass and ponder, okay. Once you pass and ponder these things, you have to pass and ponder. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, if you pass and ponder, then I think you're alive. And being as we're the only couple people alive today, man, most people don't pass and ponder this shit.
That's right. No, that's true. But we do, and we can't judge that we're special for doing that. But we do enjoy doing it, and if others could join in and enjoy it, that'd be great. But I'm not judging other people for not doing it.
Right, but what I'm saying, this is a saying. Every time you walk by a building and you say, that's beautiful architecture, you must pass and ponder.
Yes.
And ponder, okay? Not yonder and pass and ass and yonder, but pass and ponder.
Yes. You know, would Crowley agree with the platitude, resist not evil?
I don't know. He was such a bugger, man, you know. I mean, he really did do so much, but most people found him repugnant. I mean, now, I guess he had to ass and yonder instead of pass and ponder.
Right, that's why I don't study those guys.
Well, you know that I do.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good, and I like discussing because I'm an expert on them, even if I don't ponder them.
That's very. What I'm saying is, there's some. Hold on. Three words that I need you to brush up on before our next encounter here.
Okay.
There's one called gematria, and that's basically numerology. Another one's notaquarium. And then another one, Tamura, okay?
How do you spell Tamura?
Tamura, T-E-M-U-R-A. And basically what it is taking verses in the Bible, and they're written in cipher, where you read them forward, but when you read them backwards, they were written in cipher behind a certain Christian, or what would you call him? What the hell's your damn name for this damn Christians?
Gnostics?
Gnostic. I mean,
Essenes?
Gnostic, yeah, but what I'm saying, it's written in cipher, and what you do is you take a paragraph, and you'll have three or four sentences, and you put them in like a crossword puzzle, and you read up and down, up and down, up and down, then you read them backwards. And there's different, even though it may say that John went down and was a fisherman of men, and Jesus is a fisherman of men, when you read this backwards and read it up and down, it has several different meanings.
Yeah, that's that book, The Bible Code.
Yes, exactly, you know, and that was the only way they were able to sneak that shit in there, man. Yeah, it's kind of like, the law today, you know, it's kind of interesting, Bob, and it is completely resonant with lockdown of Bob Rule.
Yes.
It really is. Very much so.
I appreciate your appreciation of me. Good work, Corbin. You're one of my best students.
Well, Bob, I know, man. Don't get me wrong. I know that when we encountered each other, I was like, yeah, okay, he'll get what I'm coming from. He'll understand, and I've learned a lot from you, man, so I very much appreciate it. So, yeah, let's set this thing up tomorrow night, man, and so you've got this on tape, and that way people will realize that we are distracting them for the minute
for our own good.
Yes.
For our own good.
For our own good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, now, you don't get on the radio anymore.
No, I'm still involved in radio. I'm trying to set up a couple shows. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
The daytime talk show, and especially with the political environment, if I can set it up, it's a massive call-in show.
Okay, let's not get distracted. So I got your point. KPFK.org. Look at the Roy of Hollywood for last night, and hopefully your computer will download it and you can listen to it.
Yeah, well, it should, if it's there, I can get it on computer, man, so, yeah.
Okay, so I'll get back to you tomorrow night, probably.
All right, so Roy of Hollywood, and that was 2 a.m. to 3 a.m.?
2 to 4 a.m. 2 to 4, but his show goes 12 to 5 or 6, so you just have to put on the first part and push forward the knob so you can get the 2 o'clock to 3, and then the second part, you download and you get the 3 to 4 of a 3 to...
What's the dial number?
It's not Radio Alchemy.
What's the dial number? 90.5 or 91.5?
Yeah, I forget it.
I think it's 90.5.
Yeah, it's been a while since I lived out here. KPFK, Roy of Hollywood. Okay, right on, Bob. Right on. It's been great talking with you, man. Okay, Scott, okay?
All right. Excellent. Excellent, Corbin.
Okay.
Great talk.
Okay.
Bye.
Stop.